Chapter 7. It's funny about gorillas. They're gentle creatures by nature. They don't give you the fear chills you get from the big cats or the bears. Mostly when you see them, they're zoned out in some zoo cage. But they are a whole different animal when they're moving. You see a big gorilla moving fast, and you get a sense of just how much power you're looking at. Human-like? Yes. But like a human who's been built at the Mack Truck Factory. Marco walked over to a car. Grunting, he lifted it by the rear bumper, lifted it clear off the ground, back wheels not touching, and dropped it. I almost laughed. Car alarm! Marco went to another car. He lifted it, dropped it, and another. Lift. Drop. The night was filled with clanging, screaming, whooping car alarms. And then, a very familiar car. One we both knew. Chapman's car. Chapman, our assistant principal. A leader of the sharing. A controller. An enemy. Marco didn't lift Chapman's car. He punched it. He punched the driver's door with a fist the size of a gallon milk jug. Then, he crushed a huge, hairy gorilla fist down on the hood of my father's new car. Hey! I hollered, horrified. That's our car! My dad's going to have a cow!
I hope so,
Marco said. Then, with barely suppressed glee,
I believe my work here is done.
He ran back into the shadows. In 5 minutes, he'd be in the air. It took approximately 8 seconds for the doors of the computer store, Starbucks, and the antique store to begin spewing out very angry men and women. Chapman came running from the antique store. So did my father, with Tom close behind.
What the heck happened?
Vandals!
This neighborhood has totally gone
kids?
To arm suing the shopping
cops.
Center! Look at my door!
That last was Chapman. The rest of the controllers from the antique store looked uneasy. I waited. Holding my breath, counting the seconds until my father, followed by a furious, scowling Tom, wove through the crowd.
My car!
My father cried. He practically fell to his knees.
Somebody hurt my baby!
Mine too,
Chapman said, gazing angrily at the fist-sized dent in his car door. He looked around the street, then nodded at the two big, bulky men who were flanking him. They split up and started searching the street.
Chapman's got guys looking for us, I called to Marco. Better get out of here.
Well, come on, dude,
Marco replied.
I'm in a tree down the street. What are you waiting for?
I can't go yet, Marco, I said. I have to make sure my father's all right. I have to make sure he's still, you know.
I scanned my father's face. Had he become a controller yet? Stupid. I didn't know. Couldn't know. It's not as if controllers go around twitching, or exchanging York high fives, or playing with their ears. A controller looks, acts, seems exactly normal. My father could be my father. Or he could be screaming, helpless, just beginning to realize that his eyes and ears and mouth no longer belong to him. I waited. And then Tom gave me the clue I was hoping for.
Come on, Dad, calm down,
he said, going over to him.
We can call and report it when we get home if you want to. Let's go back inside, okay? The meeting just started and a lot of important things are gonna happen tonight. You don't want to miss it, trust me.
Go back inside?
my father echoed, looking at him like he was insane.
I'm not gonna go back inside. Somebody just tried to break into every car on the street. I'm going home right now to call Joe Johnson.
Who?
He's our insurance agent. You really should know that, Tom. Come on.
But, Dad...
Tom pleaded, shooting a furious, agitated look back at Chapman, who stood on the curb watching them. The high wail of distant police sirens split the night. Chapman shook his head slightly.
I'm staying till the end of the meeting, Tom said sullenly.
Then I expect you home by 10. My father unlocked the car and got in. Face tight and twisted with ill-concealed rage, Tom stalked over and stood on the curb next to Chapman, watching as my father drove away. He's clean, I said, as an owl landed silently on a nearby ledge. He's clean. He's okay.
Yeah, Marco said. Let's get going.
Deal, I said, letting the Falcon's keen senses carry me swiftly home.
Jake, that's round one. You know that,
Marco said after a moment. Yeah, I said. I know. The fight to save my father had only begun.
Chapter 8.
I can't believe you took that kind of chance, Rachel said, scowling. You should have waited for the rest of us.
It was late that night, and we'd all snuck out to meet in Cassie's barn to figure out what to do next. It wasn't going well. I was distracted, nervous, leaving my father alone in the house with Tom. Tobias was perched high in the rafters. Marco was strangely quiet. Cassie was listening, her face filled with distress. X was watching me with all four eyes. And Rachel... Well, she was just plain mad. Apparently, Eric had gotten word about our search for my father to Rachel, who'd been shopping at the mall. She'd rushed to back us up, stowing her packages in our rented locker. In her hurry, she'd forgotten to lock it. By the time she'd morphed, found Tobias, and flown north, the sharing meeting had completely closed down. They'd found nothing but cops writing vandalism reports. When she'd gone back to the locker for her packages, someone had stolen them. A mad Rachel is a scary thing, and I didn't envy the thief if she ever caught him. We weren't looking at a battle, we were just creating a diversion, I said. Otherwise, we'd have waited for you. I didn't look at Marco as I said it.
It was an urgent situation,
X said calmly. Exactly. Tobias was in the rafters. He ruffled his wings.
A temporary victory. As long as your dad is trying to force Tom to go with you guys, your dad's in danger.
I know, I said wearily. I've thought of trying to convince my dad to lighten up, but there's no way. He's not going to let Tom show disrespect for Grandpa G.
This is so stupid, Rachel said. I mean, we're suddenly in a knockdown, drag-out fight behind some funeral? This is idiotic. This is a nothing fight. No possible gain for us. All we can do is get hammered.
I nodded. Believe me, I know, Rachel. It's out of nowhere.
Had to be 4 days, Marco complained. Couldn't be 2 days, which would be no biggie to the Yerk.
You will not attend this burial ceremony, Rachel?
X asked.
No, I'm not really related, Rachel said. Grandpa G was Jake's great-grandfather on his mother's side. We're related on his father's side.
Ah, and that is important?
You know, maybe I'm not getting it, but why didn't Tom just tell your father he's not going, and that's the end of it?
Tobias interrupted. I looked at him. So did the rest of us.
What?
He asked, sounding defensive.
I used to do that whenever one of my aunts or uncles wanted me to go somewhere I didn't want to. They never made me go.
He was quiet a moment. Then, abashed, he said,
Oh, duh. They didn't care what I did.
Your relatives are jerks and didn't deserve you, Rachel snapped.
My father said we're going as a family, I said, And knowing my father, Tom would stir up more trouble than he could handle by directly defying him, you know?
Sure,
Marco agreed.
It's hard to get to those Conjona rays when you're grounded for life.
Plus, if he acted really badly, then I'm sure your parents would start looking at him differently,
Cussie added.
They might even decide that sharing is a bad influence and try to make him quit.
I nodded. Tom's Yurk is passing as a normal high school kid. Bottom line, he can either follow family rules or he loses his cover. The Yurks have a choice. Keep Tom in place by infesting my father. Or withdraw Tom's Yurk, put him in a new host, and kill Tom to keep him from talking.
There's another choice, Rachel said.
Yeah, I said. I knew. I just couldn't make myself say it out loud.
What choice?
Cussie asked.
If the Yurks can't make his father into a controller soon enough, they could just kill him. As an orphan, Tom's cover isn't affected. Might even be enhanced,
Rachel said. And then, looking me straight in the eye, she said,
and Tom would probably be the one to do it.
Chapter 9.
There was only one way to protect my father. Surveillance. From the moment he left the house for work in the morning, until we left for the cabin on Saturday. 24-hour surveillance. I could do most of it. He was my father, and although I didn't say it because I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, I really didn't think anybody would watch him as carefully as I would. I did agree to some backup. I knew I couldn't be everywhere at once. The next morning, Tom was all sweet reason and compromise. He went out early, claiming he'd talk to some of the kids from the sharing before school. See if they'd cover for the commitments he'd made. Right. I waited until my father was in the shower, then called myself out of school due to a death in the family. Luckily, I sound enough like my father. I went down and lurked in the living room outside the kitchen. I heard the sounds of my father getting ready to leave. Slurped coffee, the ritual checking of his beeper, the ow, as he burned his finger getting an English muffin out of the toaster. Stupid to morph in the dining room. Idiotic. But I was going to roach morph, and I couldn't travel far on those six little legs. Besides, Tom was gone, and my father wouldn't come this way. I focused on the roach. Not my favorite morph. Not anyone's favorite morph. But I needed to be small, fast, and survivable. Maybe a fly would have been better, but I'd had a close call as a fly once. Someone swatted me and smeared me all over the storage rack on a plane. Roaches are harder to kill. I felt the changes begin. So creepy at the best of times. But standing there in my dining room, shrinking as the chairs grew, shriveling down toward the wood floor you'd gouged with a rake when you were four, falling into the shadow of the table where you ate your Thanksgiving meal, that added a level of weird. I caught unexpected sight of myself in the dining room sideboard mirror. The skin of my face was turning brown, glossy, hard. I looked away. You don't want to see yourself turning into a cockroach. You don't want to see the way your mouth divides into insect mouthparts. You don't want to watch your skin melt like wax under a blowtorch and then reform into a hard, stiff armor. You don't want to be making eye contact with yourself when your eyes stop being eyes and become expressionless black pinheads. Maybe you'd think we'd all be used to it. Speaking for myself, at least? No, I'll never be used to it. Morphing may be a great weapon. It is also a horror beyond imagining. My bones dissolved. There was a liquid, squishing sound. A pair of twitching, hairy, jointed roach legs exploded from my swollen insect body, like a scene out of an alien movie. I was expecting that. They matched what my arms and legs had become. Long, feathery antennae sprouted from my forehead. Crisp, glossy wings cupped my back. My vision was extremely limited, but my antennae made up for some of that loss. You couldn't call what they did hearing or smell exactly. More like some weird melding of the two. And yet, not like either. The plan was for me to hitch a ride with my dad. Tobias would be gaining altitude, looking to hitch an elevator ride on a thermal. From high up,
he'd be able to watch almost all of my dad's drive from home to his office. 2 miles, give or take. But his reaction time would necessarily be slow. He'd be backup, but if there was an attack, it'd be up to me. I was a roach. I turned like a tiny tank and motored beneath the door. My dad's footsteps. Vibration and breeze. My antennae fixed on his location. I fought down the roach brain's desire to run. Feet the size an aircraft carrier floated past in the dim distance. No problem. I had roach senses and roach speed married to human intelligence. I was safe. Safe until I got ready to hitch a ride. My dad wore cuffed pants. The cuff. That would be the place to ride safe and secure. Just a question of getting there. Up onto the shoe. Up the sock. Should be no problem. Right. Light change! Movement! Above me! I dodged. BAM!
Hello, Phantomorphs, and thank you for listening to another episode of Audiomorphs, the Animorphs Auditory Experience. As always, this is your host, Daniel. We got another 3 chapters down. We're moving right along on this one. And some real long-time, keen-eared listeners might notice that some of the voices maybe aren't so consistent book to book for some of the more tertiary characters, people like even Chapman, but especially any of their parents. It's sort of, listen, honestly, I'm just a little too lazy to like ever go back and find out what I did the previous time. I'm sort of basing it on memory and also winging it every time. Sorry to disappoint if you weren't aware. I've now ruined the illusion, but I have justification now for why Jake's dad sounds just sort of like Jake. Also, just sort of a same with Chapman, really, but especially Jake's dad. It was just sort of also Jake's voice. They say that Jake sounds like his dad in this chapter, so I don't think anyone was mad about it. But if they were, now you can't be. I have in-text proof. Anyway, we got some messages sent in. So, first of all, I need to shout out the new Platinum member, Auxiliary Animorph, Yonatan, I hope I said that right, who kindly donated to my server fees with the message, "Thanks for recording the Audiomorphs podcast," and then a little smiley face. I have a link to my PayPal on my website. That's theapocalypse.com. Theapocalypse, like apocalypse, with a D in the middle. Just if you feel, if the spirit moves you to help me with my hosting fees. I spend $200 on this year. So it's not terrible, but I do pay out of pocket to keep this thing running. So I appreciate everyone who's ever sent me money. So thanks again, Yonatan. I really appreciate that. I also have some messages through the Tumblr, that's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. The first one's a follow-up from Willis, from last week. We were kind of discussing, divorce in the Animorphs universe, and, Willis just says, "Damn, so much has happened in Animorphs, I straight up forgot about Rachel's divorced parents." Yeah, it doesn't come up super often, and doesn't really seem to, which, you know, it doesn't really seem to impact Rachel, but I sort of get that, because, like, she's got other stuff going on. It impacted her for that book, and then, you know, she got better. Yeah, but Rachel's got divorced parents. We don't hear about it too often, but it's true. I also have a message from Mystic Ferret, who writes in saying, "Hi, Daniel. Writing this after the end of Book 30, Chapter 12. First off, keep up the good work. Greatly enjoying binging every book once you've completed recording it. Second, and a bit off topic, hearing another viewer talk about different POVs affecting how morphing scenes are written, and your description of mentally checking out during those parts reminds me of my view of transformation sequences in Magical Girl anime. I love watching them a lot of the time, but they get repetitive, so as an adult, I see them as good pausing points to use the bathroom or grab a snack. Just felt a similarity between that and your feelings on the morphing scenes, lol." So true. I've, you know, seen my fair share of Magical Girl or Maho Senshi if you are pretentious or speak Japanese anime. And well, I guess I'm a bit more familiar with Super Sentai as far as transformations. But yes, transformations from Japanese media are very cool. They're very fun sequences. The first three times you see them, and then God bless all the anime and all the Sentai that then have an abbreviated, edited version where they just sort of flash and the armor comes on. Because sometimes you're just not in the mood for a cool 20-second sequence. Thank you for writing in Mystic. If you'd like to write in, like Willis and Mystic here, you can do that through that Tumblr. You can also reach me at Gmail. That's audiomorphscast@gmail.com. And I already mentioned my website, theapocalypse.com. That has a contact form on it. You can also tweet at me, at audiomorphs, and that's where you should check if I'm ever late uploading. I should have a reason why there, and also any sort of general announcements. Don't use it often for that purpose, but if I ever need to, I've decided that's where I'm going to do it. With all of that out of the way, I don't think I have anything else to say. Thank you all for listening, and we should just be chugging along right on schedule, so I'll see you all next week. My name is Daniel. I believe one day the Andalites will come. Until then, we fight.